Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
And then the whole college thing, yep, I'm going. I'm living in a dorm with a roommate who's so sweet. With work, it's gonna be hard. Like my first week of school, I'm leaving to go to Fiji for work. And then I'll be in New York a bunch this year for work and traveling to a different country because I'm creating something with this country and that's for work. So I don't know how much of school I'm gonna attend, but I'm gonna go in and talk to my deans and everyone and hope that I can try and balance it all. But I do want the experience of like game days, partying. I don't really care about school, as you guys all know.
So what do we know about Olivia Jade?
So Olivia Jade is an influencer. She has almost 2 million subscribers on her YouTube channel, over 1 million followers on Instagram, and she's been able to really leverage her life as a college student into a brand. She's done sponsored content with Amazon Prime, who furnished her dorm room. She has a makeup palette out with beauty retailer Sephora. She's done sponsorships with Tresemme. She went to New York Fashion Week with them. So she's been really able to show off this kind of aspirational lifestyle that a lot of influencers peddle. And hers is centered on being a student at USC.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is Friday, March 15th, and what you're going to be hearing in this presentation is part of a much larger conversation, part of a collaboration that I recently did with our friend Scott Hambrick from Online Great Books. There's a whole other hour, but I'm actually going to direct you to the Online Great Books podcast to hear the rest of it. Because we talk a lot about school history and school politics, Common Core, public-private partnerships, Charlotte Iserby, all that good stuff. So you can go to onlinegreatbooks.com, just click the podcast tab. Scott's past guests include Brett McKay from The Art of Manliness and Jordan Peterson on the importance of reading the great books.
For God's sakes, read!
I'm sorry, I will stop doing that. I will stop doing that every time I mention Jordan Peterson's name. But we wanted to ASAP, share our thoughts about apparently the first college scam that most of America has ever heard about. If you are encountering this for the first time right now, this week, over 50 people have been named and are being indicted on various fraud charges. The ringleader of this whole operation is a man named Rick Singer. And this scam ran on multiple levels. Singer's operation was arranging for people to take college admissions exams in place of the client's children. So this involved bribing entrance exam administrators. We're going to get into all of this in the show if you're unfamiliar with this story. But this is being called the largest higher education scandal in the history of America. I disagree. In this show, I wind up actually taking a couple of strolls down memory lane. I've been thinking a lot lately about my own college experience. Something is happening with the college that I went to. I'm actually going to be talking about this in an upcoming episode of The Discomfort Zone. But what I will tell you here, many memories, like many uncomfortable memories, were recently triggered by a series that I watched on Netflix called Unsolved, which was about the murders of Christopher Wallace, Notorious B.I.G., and Tupac Shakur. And the series like intersperses these three timelines. One, the life of Tupac and Biggie. The second, an investigation immediately following Biggie's death, and then a reinvestigation done, I think, in 2006 when Biggie's mother was going to sue the LAPD. I'm so glad I watched this. I was absolutely enthralled. It's really, really well done. Now, I'm going to tell you, the show is called Unsolved. So if you go into it thinking they're going to tell you who perpetrated either of these murders or both, you're going to be disappointed. But I think we all know who was really behind both of these crimes. Don't we, Puffy? The show is infused with a lot of Tupac's music and Biggie's music, and it brought me back to these scenes in the late 1990s. I didn't mention this in episode 600, which was about the music of School Sucks, but Notorious B.I.G. was a huge part of the college soundtrack. I hate to have to admit this to you even now, but like freshman, sophomore year in college, we would go every Wednesday night to the bar at the Ramada Inn in Bennington, Vermont. And they would have like a dance night, and we would go and dance. And the door at this bar at the Ramada was notoriously porous when it came to underage people. So the dude at the door was always the same dude. You could basically show this guy a Garbage Pail Kid card. And as long as you did it with confidence, you were in. He would look at it and go, okay, so you're Handy Randy. Yeah. And that's it. And the next thing you knew, you were drinking Long Island iced teas and dancing to the Notorious B.I.G.'s. I actually did wind up getting arrested for trying to use a fake ID at this bar. After many, many Wednesdays of successful entry, I present my Garbage Pail Kid card or whatever it was to the bouncer at the door. Right as I'm doing this, an undercover cop walks up and takes it out of his hand. He looks at the ID, he looks at me, and he says, why don't you go ahead and put those hands behind your back there, Randy? This was one of my least favorite experiences in college while in handcuffs. There were like five others. And they all involved the police. There's no innuendo there. Yeah, so there are a couple of times where I veer down into memory lane talking about my college experience and trying to relate some of that to this story. Also, my professional experience working as a private educational service provider and a college consultant, because that's what Rick Singer was doing. And he was really capitalizing on the college myth and the sense of desperation that seems great in so many people. So like I said, onlinegreatbooks.com. If you want to hear the whole show next week, I'd say check that out next week. Check out their other podcasts. For now, let's get right into my conversation with Scott Hambrick about this current college admissions scandal. Thank you so much for listening, and take care. There's lots of good reasons to go to college. There's lots of people that college is the right choice for. What we're trying to make a dent in is this egalitarian idea that everybody needs to go to college, that college is the 13th grade, that you are not successful until you have a 2 or a 4-year degree. That's a problem, especially with the opportunities in this economy. Like, obviously, digital marketing is one of the best examples, but there are others of ways that you can be learning. Like, you build a foundation, going to work, it could be anything. My father said to me when I was 17, and I was really debating, like, I didn't want to go to college, right? I had serious reservations about it because I had done so poorly in high school and I was so uninterested in school. The best information that he had in 1994 was that this was the opportunity,
yep,
right? This is the opportunity to turn things around. And he said to me, you can get what you think is a pretty decent job right now. I detailed cars. I made $6 an hour. He said, you might get a job making $10 an hour, $12 an hour, and compared to the work you're currently doing, you will feel rich. And you might just make a career out of that. And he said, you know, I've seen that happen to so many people. I appreciate that he was trying to protect me from what he thought was a bad decision. And in my case, you know, one of the difficult things is I was so unfocused and so wayward that I actually think the exposure to the college environment, even though I almost got kicked out for both academic and disciplinary reasons my freshman year, eventually I came to see the value of education there. So I always remember that when I criticize that I proved my abilities to myself in college. Mm. But that doesn't seem to be the experience for a majority of people. I had one professor who demanded a lot of me. expected a lot of me, demanded a lot of me. And when I met those demands, I felt accomplished. I felt a real sense of intellectual accomplishment. Like, oh my gosh, I actually have interesting things to say in the world of ideas. That was startling to me. I had never had that experience at any point in my schooling life. But the idea that college is the rule, that idea has to go, right? The people who are promoting the egalitarian idea of college for everybody, they love to use words like diversity and inclusion, except when it's like diversity of paths and choices, inclusion of options. Then it's off the table for some reason. You know, everybody is so different, and that's has been a big part of what I've argued at lower levels of education, which is why I promote, you know, unschooling, home education, self-directed learning, why we talk so much on School Sucks about intrinsically motivated education, because you could never have a one-size-fits-all for education. And I think the same is true with the upper levels of schooling, you know, of higher education, starting with the very choice to go or not.
Right. Like in 1958 – like if you could go to college and did, man, I don't know if that was an automatic, but it was pretty close.
Probably the best opportunity that you had.
Yeah.
Sure.
So that's 1958. At some point that stopped being true. And I don't know if that was 1998 or if it was 1978 or when or 2008, but at some point that stopped being true. And now information and trades, I'm going to call digital marketing even a trade, changed so rapidly. I don't know how you can actually teach people in a static setting over, you know, 12, 16, 4 years, whatever, and prepare them for what is the fast-paced world of, you know, work in the United States at this point. I don't know. I went to this crappy school in rural Oklahoma. My IQ's all right, but my education there wasn't very good, and I ended up going to the University of Oklahoma, and I didn't know how to play that game. I didn't know how to do that. Like, school's a game. Like, there's a certain way you do it. There's stuff you got to do if you're going to win that game. And it's not just do the homework, you know? It's not just, you know, do well on the test. Like, if you wanted to go to medical school in the early 90s when I was at the University of Oklahoma, there was a game that had to be played. And I would – so as this quasi-reform redneck from rural Oklahoma going to the school, I would see people there in that pre-med program who knew how to do that. Maybe their dad or their mom was a doctor, or maybe both of their parents were professional people and their parents had gone through it. And so my parents were this baby boomer age. So these are these baby boomer parents. They had done it. Maybe even their grandparents had done it. Like, they knew how to do school. Well, I just knew how to not be truant.
And, right, right.
And I knew that I was at a disadvantage in that venue. I knew it. I was keenly aware of it. You know, for example, I think that people that go to college know that, like, if you're not in a sorority or a fraternity, you don't have the test files they have access to, right? Of, like, the past tests. And there's an infrastructure that those people have access to that if you're an independent like I was, you didn't have.
Sure.
And so I didn't have that. And like I said, I was keenly aware of that the whole time I was there. It felt like a rigged game to me. I'm not going to say that the whole thing is rigged and there's only like a select few winners, but there was definitely a piece of institutional knowledge that you needed to have to go to a big four-year university and have the best possible outcome.
Sure.
Like, you can't go in there with no shoes, you know, and then, like, you know, some hillbilly and just crush the shit out of it. Like, you can have a good outcome, but if someone says dad's an attorney and his mom is a doctor and their grandparents went to school and all of their fucking grandparents went and they all come on the alumni day and all that, they've got advantages I didn't have.
Right.
So then
the legacy.
Yes. It's worth something. And then yesterday I saw this news break about these Hollywood mediocrities that were paying hundreds of thousands and even millions of dollars to get their kids to go to these, frankly, not that great of a school and be placed on the sports teams. Felicity Huffman is one of them that's been named, and Lori Loughlin, Aunt Becky from Full House, who I always thought was like piping hot, by the way.
I'm so
upset that Aunt Becky did that.
I learned that this was actually the plot of an episode of Full House, season 6, called Be True to Your Preschool, where Uncle Jesse actually forges or fakes certain information. He fills out forms to get the two. They have twins eventually. You know, if people didn't follow Full House all the way to the end, they got married and they had two twin boys, I think. So he's like fudging this preschool application to get the boys in to the school. What's irritating to me is I'm somewhat suspicious this is only a story because famous people are involved.
Right, right.
I certainly, when these things happen, people post in the Facebook group, people email me links, and I'm thinking, you know, is this news? Is this just all of America, you know, mainstream America, saying the phrase college scam for the first time?
Well, you know what I think it is?
Yeah.
This has been going on forever. Everybody knew that if the school had a wing named after your dad, that you got to go. Like that's always been a trope. I think this is ultimately about going after Kushner.
Oh, interesting. Because, yeah, I mean, whenever a story just like takes the national news by storm, my new question is, how are they going to tie it to Trump?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, if something has all of this momentum and energy and interest and anchor enthusiasm, it's like, yeah, but how are they going to throw this turd at Trump and get it to stick to him?
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be a few outcomes of this that we find disappointing. I'm pretty neutral on the Jared Kushner thing. I don't really care about it one way or the other. But you're right. I have started to see that most of the commentary on this seems to mention, at the time, Jared Kushner was applying to, I guess, was it Harvard or Yale? His father, who also, side note, wound up in jail for other reasons, some kind of fraud charge. I'm not sure. But he made like a $2.5 million, again, unrelated contribution to the school at the time Jared was applying.
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously one thing that is newsworthy about the current scandal is that when somebody is super rich, like what we're seeing right now is a path for the medium rich. Right. The people who can't afford to buy the new glass building where all of these unnecessary administrators are going to go, that the college, as it just bloats because of its federal funding, you know, these people need a pen to be in all day and probably do nothing. I'm sorry. That's commentary. But for the people who can't afford to provide the college with those kinds of resources, we see through this current breaking news a new path that has been created over the last 10, 15, 20 years, however long this has been going on. That's an interesting component to this, is that when Jared Kushner's dad, and none of the people criticizing Jared Kushner thanked the dad because everybody at the school got to use that money.
Right.
This is money going into the pockets of individual at various levels or various places in the chain of the admissions process.
Yeah, from what I understand, some of this money was just paid to people to help them forge papers, frankly. And then some of it And some of it was to certain figures in the athletic programs. And, you know, it's all over the place, apparently. But in the context of this conversation we're having, it's not so much like, you know, the particulars of the scandal. It's just like, what is this schooling? What is it? Like, what is this game? Like, what are we doing? So if you've got Lori Loughlin's kids and Felicity Huffman's kids there, I think it was at USC, both of those. Mm-hmm. And you're just, you know, some poor Hispanic kid from, you know, East LA or whatever, trying to get into that school. And then this kind of stuff's going on. It's like, what is that you are doing? What are you participating in? Is it actually an education or is it some sort of a validation process, right? Like they get their kids in there, you get out, they've stamped your passport, right? Mm-hmm. This person is the kind of person that goes there. It's a club membership maybe at this point.
Yeah, and there's kind of a paradoxical thing happening here, right? So obviously, in the public mind, largely due to propaganda, this egalitarian campaign that's been running at least since you and I were in high school, that everybody has to go to college, this progressive idea. And a lot of that propaganda, people will learn this in the next episode of School Sucks, is actually generated by college organizations.
Yeah.
Right? The College Board and beyond. And there's I think, NACE, the National Association of Colleges and Employers, is another like conglomerate that produces a bunch of data. Very like data that is collected, no problem. But then the way a lot of the data is presented is definitely a problem, and it's very, very misleading. So in the public mind, the value of the degree has been inflated. Everybody needs one. This is the key to opportunity in life. But at the same time, it's devalued in its attainability, right? Because anybody can get one. And it's also devalued in its practical meaning, because anybody can have one. Mm. It doesn't separate people like it used to, the 4-year degree. And this is not, I don't think this is an elitist argument. I think this is just a recognition of reality. So now you have people who are in the 1%. I'm just using that as a shorthand. Mm-hmm. But they're not in the 0.01%, you know? But they're people of means, and they're saying to themselves, okay, so just getting a BS or a BA is worthless. Now what? How do we get an edge? How do I get so-and-so on the crew team at this prestigious right. school for crew? How do I get people into Ivy League schools? You're right. Like the variety of schools is pretty mixed. So obviously the guy who is running this scheme, Rick Singer. Hmm. Sorry, I merged him with Rick Springfield in my mind for a second, who was a singer.
Mm, right.
But his name was Rick Singer. His name was Rick Singer. I'm guessing that he's catering to his clients. So the parent says, we want USC or we want, you know, this Ivy. And he comes up with a path and a plan to get them there. But I saw the list of schools, and a couple of them were kind of curious choices, right? Like, yeah. Why would you? I mean, I think the top price I saw being paid was $6 million.
Yeah.
I saw another one over $1.2 million. You know, there are people who are saying it needs to be, again, people of means, it needs to be more than just a bachelor's degree from the college that, you know, Lori Loughlin's daughter could probably get into. I don't know if you saw her quote on her YouTube channel. Somebody pulled a clip of her going, yeah, so I am going to go to college, but really just going for the parties and the social thing. I really don't care about school. You guys know that. So you don't even really need to make an argument that that spot could go to a more qualified candidate.
She didn't want it.
No. And I think, I don't know if it was her or Hoffman's daughter, where there was actually like a Photoshop of one of them rowing crew.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, could that be real? Like, what is the vetting process at the college like if you could submit a Photoshopped photo? And there's no background check on that.
That must so be just like, that's Singer's expertise. He knows what sports you can get into without a tryout, probably.
Right. And I think that exposes that obviously there's like administrative expansion and administrative waste. That's not the only place where you have that happening in like these, first of all, like worthless programs of study, unnecessary administrators. But I think athletics is a problem as well. And if you know, coaches of sports like water polo are having that much sway in the admissions process, that's probably also something that needs to be looked at. But somebody posted the Reason article. Reason wrote an article like, we need to shoot the college admissions process into the sun.
Yeah, I saw that.
So I just pulled this little excerpt from it. Bribing athletic officials to falsely claim the client was a high-value recruit for a certain sport. This often involved sending fake photos of the kids engaged in athletic activities. Pole vaulting, swimming, that's ambitious, right? That's just brazen. Like, yeah, it was a pole vaulter and your face is Photoshopped on a pole vaulting person for sports they don't actually play. So it was either Laughlin's daughter or Huffman's daughter that was presented as somebody who was like high up, a high up member of this crew association, I think in Los Angeles, and they get into USC as a result of this.
So all you people listening, if you got somebody that's good at Photoshop, I want you to Photoshop Brett's head on Allison Stoke pole vaulting. And then we're going to submit that to like every state university in the country and see if we can get Brett a scholarship.
I love that. I could at least use it as cover art for this episode.
Allison Stoke. That's ridiculous. And so the FBI is involved, by the way.
Operation Varsity Blues, this is called. And I guess it's been going on for a decade, which is how they managed to ensnare so many people or have so many people ensnared right when they announced it.
I'm pretty sure there's other crime, right? Is this the crime that we need to be pursuing? Maybe.
I think it's a RICO case, right? What they usually use against organized crime, because you have an enterprise. There's various people involved up and down, like various people at various levels of this enterprise involved in this. So it is conspiracy. It is what's the one they always say? Interstate.
Yeah, it's interstate. It's misuse of the U.S. mail service.
So there's lots of federal crimes involved in this. And I mean, I just wasn't that surprised by it. I mean, no. I think it's interesting, and I think it is a landmark because lots of people are now maybe, as the recent article suggests, going to question how much public funding should be going to higher education and what does public funding mean for higher education and how does it change the culture of higher education? So I think it's probably going to affect it in very similar ways to how it affected the lower levels of schools. If it is a publicly funded thing, it means it has to be all things to all people. We certainly see many, many cries over the last 5 or 6 years coming from these campuses for more safety, more safe spaces, more inclusion, less mean guys, you know, those kinds of things. And that is very much like to go back to the earlier conversation we were having about what's obscured from history. Because there's no place for controversy.
Right.
There's no place for discomfort.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to nerf this whole institution, so many things are going to have to go.
Right.
Right. So many things can't be a part of it, and it has to cater to the weakest and the whiniest in the entire population.
Nerf
to survive
college. Yeah. This whole scandal isn't going to serve to bolster admission standards. It's not going to buff college, right? It's not going to college isn't going to get harder to get into because of this. It's probably going to make it actually easier. And so if you've got, like, let's say that you are a USC pole vaulter, legit,
right,
and you graduated in May,
the non-photoshopped variety. Gotcha.
Right. Yeah. I think your diploma is worth less today than it was Monday.
It's certainly more in question.
Right. They're like, oh yeah, sure. Brett, yeah, you were a curler at the University of Wisconsin, right?
Well, even like if you look at the way everybody got the mark of, you know, the Penn State football program, like everybody who was involved in that, well, it certainly spread beyond Paterno and whoever the really bad guy was. Right. But he Paterno's involvement, Paterno, for those who don't know, this was a scandal a couple of years ago where the Penn State football program, which is, you know, a couple hours away from where I am, there were these allegations and I think basically proof of sexual abuse happening inside that program that lots of people knew about it. Lots of people were covering up. It ended Joe Paterno's career. He was one of the most celebrated coaches in the history of college football. I do not know, so I will not comment on how much Joe Paterno actually knew about what was going on and whether or not he participated in the cover-up. But it was definitely a dark mark on so many people who participated in athletics in Penn State, and it even expanded beyond Penn State, right, to college athletic culture. So this is certainly going to have the same effect where, you're right, if somebody graduated from USC and they were a pole vaulter or whatever, and you can tie it back to like, oh, were you coached by so-and-so who took all these bribes from, Rick Singer? Yeah, that is definitely a blemish on your athletic / college career, for sure.
Yeah. So I've got two daughters here, and, you know, I don't know what to do. College is a weird game. You get out of a college, perhaps, and you don't know the difference between an invoice and a statement and a finance charge with your accounting degree. Maybe. Some people certainly do a lot of people get out of college with a real live education and do know things and have some skills. But the inflation in diplomas and these sorts of scandals. And then also just like, I wouldn't want to subject myself to that whole thing. Just the thing. Can you imagine being at USC in the sports program right now?
It's definitely, that goes so far and wide across the country in so many academic and athletic programs at a variety of different schools at, levels below college. A lot of people proctoring these tests who were paid off, they might be high school teachers. They might be guidance counselors. Those are usually the types of people who are taking those jobs. Now, obviously, this guy Singer had quite a network. So it's possible, like, I don't think the barrier to entry to proctoring SAT or ACT tests is super high. But now that whole institution is going to be questioned. I think that's going to actually be one of the predictable, but I would say negative outcomes of this whole thing. I think there's going to be lots of effort to steer attention away from questioning the school religion, from questioning this religious idea of higher education and finding other things to blame or issues, and we can talk about a few of them, things that are going to be more divisive, where now there's an opportunity for mainstream America to say, yeah, maybe we really should look at how much federal money or how much of our money, if we dare, is being funneled into higher education. What I'm worried will happen is that the very partisan media on both sides will convert that revelation into a series of hot button issues that will just turn those people, you know, given the opportunity to have said revelation, into just fighting with each other about, you know, the predictable, comfortable to fight about type issues.
Right. And of course, that's what's going to happen. Of course.
One that I've already heard is for-profit education. See what happens when we allow for-profit education. So Singer had these two enterprises. One was this Edge, it was called. It was a, I have it right here, Edge College and Career Network, which was basically a fake charity. But then he actually, from what I read about him, had a legitimate start in educational services like test prep and college consulting. So it sounds like he was doing work that this affects me negatively, Scott, because this is the work that I used to do.
Right.
I have a blemish too, I guess. So he started maybe in the 90s doing this. He had a questionable professional background before that. His test prep and college consulting company was called Key. And, you know, that is for-profit education. Like I said, that is what I used to do. We charged, you know, really substantial hourly rates and we got results. And that was how we got more business. We got, and the company that I ran in New Hampshire was actually geared primarily towards getting kids into these top tier schools, getting kids what are the scores you need in addition with, you know, the rest of your admissions package to get into these top tier schools. I don't think when I started doing that in 2009, I was aware of how severe this problem was, of the misguided faith, the incredibly misguided faith that people were putting in higher education and the supposed opportunities it would create. I mean, I should have known, like, it didn't create many for me practically. I'm grateful for the experience, for the learning experience of going. But that time, if I was more self-directed, could have been better spent. So I think there'll be an outcry on CNN and MSNBC and a variety of lesser blogs and YouTube personalities condemning for-profit education as the gateway to this scandal. I've already heard talk about affirmative action, talk of privilege, right? This is just, if you're already in a system that is so set up to favor you, why are you so incompetent that you would need these extra advantages? But I guess that's, you know, the consequence of being privileged. You know, that's an argument that people are making as well. One that I think is really unfortunate, as somebody who used to be a for-profit education service provider, is there'll probably be additional scrutiny towards the SAT and the ACT, right? Like, I bet you will start to hear calls, let's do away with these tests.
Yeah.
I was listening to, I just grabbed a whole bunch of articles and YouTube clips and started going through them. And one of the ones I found interesting was Alan Dershowitz. I think he was being interviewed on Fox News. And, you know, he has taught at Harvard for decades and he's still there. He acknowledged, he said, look, the culture of academia has basically become a non-meritocracy. Yeah. Lots of schools have done away with even having grades. Now, my attitude about grades at the lower levels of school certainly probably aligns with school higher education institutions doing away with grades,
right?
Especially with giving elementary school students report cards. Like, yeah, that's not something that I'm for. But what kind of feedback mechanisms are students who are purportedly being trained for careers, being trained in skills, being trained to enter the workforce, what kind of feedback mechanisms are they getting in higher education without grades? Especially if they're at some super large school where they're in classes of 200 or 300 people and you don't get a lot of one-on-one time with professors or assistant professors or assistants to the assistant professors. People who've gone to very good schools have said that, yes, the admissions is extremely difficult, but once you're in, it's much easier to stay in. First of all, you could pick a nonsense major, like you could pick gender studies or something where professors are predictably more concerned with producing disciples
right.
than producing academic rigor. Obviously, it's in the school's interest to keep students there because those students are I mean, there's all sorts of formula funding for college as well. Like if you if the student population is filled, if you have struggling students, like students who aren't doing well, students who are on academic probation, there might even be like formula funding mechanisms that get the schools more money for that. So just because like a student is struggling doesn't mean they're automatically going to get kicked out of the school. The school has lots of incentives to keep those students there. You know, I was talking a couple months ago about this T.M. Landry scandal that happened in Louisiana. Right, 49th in the state in education, and people had formed a pretty religious idea about this as a kind of exit from the lack of opportunity, these inner city schools, so, these underperforming schools.
Yeah, so T.M. Landry, was it in Baton Rouge?
I believe so. It was definitely in Louisiana. I know that, and I remember Louisiana was at like the very bottom of the state list as far as you know the educational quality metrics were concerned.
It was like a predominantly black, I think it was a charter school, right? And they had enormous percentages of the kids there going to top-tier schools. They had fantastic acceptance rates there.
I bring that up because I want to back away from something that I said, that these kids will go and fail out in the first semester. I don't. I think I kind of made that as a rule of the consequence of a of fraud like that, or schools themselves in their efforts to make their brochures look more multicultural and diverse are setting kids up for failure. I think that even if kids of any population, any ethnic background, any race, they could all struggle and they could all be pulled along by the school and kept in the school, but. There are still consequences of that, right? That is a very – as somebody who struggled in college, even somebody who didn't care about academics at all when I first got there, it was still a very stressful thing. And it still took an emotional toll on me, and it kind of was reinforcing. I remember being like – I wasn't doing well in college until my junior year. And I remember the discouragement and – the hopelessness at one point of this is just reinforcing everything that I already knew about myself based on high school, right? Based on what I learned in high school that I'm kind of dumb and I can be a C student. Like this is just a costly way of reinforcing that. I know I have to make it through this, but if I make it through this with a 2.0 GPA and get my BA in communications, what is that even going to mean?
Right.
You know, in the professional world. I mean, there were moments like that where I was thoughtful enough to ask those questions. And then it was like the discovery of history that, you know, like I said, I was able to prove myself to myself and turn my whole, I was like on the national dean's list a year later. I'm very thankful to that professor for that turnaround. But a lot of kids won't have that experience, right? They get in for one reason or another and they struggle. And then they just kind of languish there.
Right.
But the larger point that I was trying to make is that Dershowitz points out, and a lot of people who've gone to these school elite schools point out, Dershowitz included, I think he went to Yale before he taught at Harvard, is that they're turning away from merit. They're turning away from those kinds of harsh judgments from reality, cause and effect, honest feedback. Because, again, that's not NERF.
Right.
Right? Getting a D is not NERFy. It just isn't.
Not nervy, no.
Right? It doesn't feel good. It's triggering, whatever, you know? It's upsetting. So, yeah, the egalitarian idea that everybody needs to go to college, the outcome that that's had in college is like, well, geez, if everyone's going to be here, our standards need to go down. So there's less academic rigor across the board. John Taylor Gatto was pointing that out 20 years ago in the Underground History of American Education, talking about these elite schools. Right. Still super hard to get in because they can be exclusive. But once you're there, most people can usually find a way to stay.
Yeah. So what are you getting when you get the diploma? Some of these reports show up to like $6 million were spent in trying to get these kids into whatever select school it was. And you think about that, like what could the parent have done with that $6 million? If they said, you know, I've got six with a bunch of zeros behind it that I'm willing to toss at this kid. Of all the things that they could have done with that, that's what they did. You know, they could have bought them several small businesses and have them learn in the School of Hard Knocks and maybe get one of them to take on, right? They could have done – you could have hired Alan Dershowitz to teach your kid law. They could, with $6 million, you can do a lot of stuff. And that's what they chose to do with it. So, you know, very, very interesting. There's not necessarily like efficient market theory going on here. It's not like, you know, somebody did all the math. I'm like, this is the best use of the $6 million for the benefit of my kid. But that is clearly a parent who's willing to go to great lengths to put their kid in some sort of an advantage. And that's what they chose to do. And that is fascinating to me.
It to me, it is at the same level of fascination with like learning that there was a piece of toast that had an image of the Virgin Mary on it when it came out of the toaster and somebody bought it on eBay for $25,000.
Right.
Right. Like I think those two things to me are at the same levels of absurd. And how could somebody so successful, I'm stopping myself mid-sentence after just watching the Academy Awards like 2 weeks ago. I was about to say, how could somebody so successful be so disconnected from reality? But it's actually a pretty common problem based on my experience watching that show and observing Hollywood and the media generally. Successful, like people who have a lot of money, so disconnected from reality and so disconnected from the needs of their own child. Lori Loughlin's daughter is a YouTube star and a famous Instagram person. Like college, how is college anything other than a setback? But she admitted as much in her video when she said, I'm going there for the college experience, to party. So when you talked about like, if you had the option to go to college in 1953, go. Because there was a college experience that was a signal, right? A credential, I would say more appropriately, and a network. Because there was no other ways to get those things. Forget 1953. There was no other ways to get those things when I started looking at colleges in 1993, right? There was no other way to build a nationwide or a nation-spanning or even globe-spanning network. And there was no substitute credential. I couldn't have a digital paper trail like I could today. Right, I couldn't set up a website. I couldn't have a blog. I couldn't have an easily accessible online portfolio. I was mailing people videotapes in the 90s, you know, like in big bulky envelopes. There were things that until really recently, like the last 10, 15 years, were just not options, and college was the best bet for lots of people in lots of situations. And there still are plenty of people in numerous situations where college is the best bet, but it is decreasing all of the time, and mainstream America is just not catching up with that reality. It shouldn't surprise us that disconnected Hollywood people are paying millions of dollars to get their child into like a medium to maybe slightly upper tier school.
Can you imagine? Do you think William H. Macy and Felicity Huffman were having like a knockdown drag out? He's like, listen, it's not worth the money. You know, the kid's not a great student, or she could have got in anyway. And she's like, I'm going to do it. Or Susie needs the best. Can you imagine? Do you think, can you imagine the arguments?
I would just want to hear the conversation, and I guess we'll have to be patient and wait for the tell-all, right, when they're sitting across the table from Gail or Oprah saying, well, you know, here's why I'm the victim. You know, that revelation or that speech, I'm sure it's coming from one of these people, like because they're famous and people will be interested in hearing that story. But yeah, what's the process of deliberation like?
Crazy.
That's what I want to know. It's like, okay, what do we do when who do we pay when she's getting D's or F's?
Right.
If the school even still has grades.
So let's bring this back to something concrete.
Sure.
Or actionable or unactionable for regular people. So if you've got a kid, and I've got a couple here that are looking at this, you know, maybe I don't hire Mr. Singer to get him into State U, but you know, do you go spend the money for the SAT, ACT prep course? I mean, you're still trying to get them into this game where the rules and the rewards aren't clear. And like you said, you know, the value of the diploma is declining. And not only is it declining, it's declining at an increasingly fast rate. So if you have a kid that starts college in the fall here, and let's say it's a great decision today, it's not clear to me that by the time that kid graduates in 4.5 years, that it will have been a good idea. Right? Changing fast.
It changed for me between 1995 and 1999.
When you were in school. Was that where you were in school?
Right. Like in September 1995, college was, in the program that I was in, is based on everything that I knew, the best path to getting the career that I kind of vaguely wanted, mm-hmm. right? Something in like, you know, journalism, mass media, communications, broadcast, radio. I had some kind of vague need that one of those things was going to satisfy, right? Somewhere there'd be a camera or a microphone that I could sit behind and talk. But by 1998, 1999, it was basically the stupidest thing that I could have been doing.
Right.
And the problem was, I shouldn't call it stupid because I didn't even know.
Right. Yeah, that's the problem. You probably made the best decision that you could with the information you had.
Which was basically none.
Right. And you had more information as somebody that was looking at going into college in the fall than somebody who's looking into going into college in the fall of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
You were shooting at a moving target. They are shooting at a much more quickly and smaller moving target that's even smaller. I don't know what the game is, and I don't know what we're getting. I really don't. It's fascinating.
You have two girls who are close.
They got a 14 and a 16.
Close to the going age,
yep,
right? It's
right.
At least it's like definitely something that's on the table now.
Yeah, and the older one, she doesn't really have any interest in going to college because she's heard me with my tinfoil hat for all these years. But even setting that aside, what does work look like? What do you do to make some path towards being self-sustaining? I don't think it's ever been harder.
Right. It's interesting that you say that because there's never been more opportunity. And I think as a result of that, it's never been a more difficult decision.
Hmm.
It's very easy to wind up with decision paralysis.
And then you join the Yang Gang. Give me my bag.
I feel like when I was a junior or senior in high school, I could have listed all of the options for me on my fingers. Mm-hmm. I think I could have listed every major at the college I went to on my fingers of my two hands.
Right.
Today, just the number of skills that you could insert into the number of industries, it's just multiplied so much. And you think about how everything is niche down. Like none of that, niches always existed, but nothing like what we have today.
Right.
Right. Like I want to do digital photography in wedding cakes. That's two things you can put together and make a career.
Number one, homeschooling and anti-public education podcast in the world.
Right? Sure.
It's so interesting,
just back to I saw maybe six or seven roads that I could have taken this bachelor's degree in communication down to some kind of career. Like the other thing too is the degree had no specialization. So when I showed it to people, even in the year 2000, they were like, yeah, whatever. What do you know how to do?
Right.
I was like, nothing good. I know a little bit about several things, but, and also, that's compounded by the fact that I wasn't a good student through most of that program. Like I loaded up on the core classes for the major freshman and sophomore year, got like C's in most of them, walked away without learning much. And I had friends who had the same degree, and one of my friends went into sports journalism and does pretty well. Another friend went into marketing. He does pretty well. So it's not, I wasn't cursed. I wasn't a victim. I'm not saying that.
But here's the dirty secret that nobody talks about. Most people aren't good students.
Right. Yeah. For me, it was just a particularly bad intersection of not treating myself well physically, mentally, not having any foresight, not having good study habits, being in a bad school, in a bad program at the wrong time, in a changing industry. it was kind of a perfect storm. But there were lots of I could have been a better defender of myself and my needs and my future. So I don't ever want to talk about college in a way that makes people feel like college is an antagonist and they are a victim.
Well, sure.
So when I catch myself doing that, I want to back away from that and say, here are the responsibilities that I didn't fulfill. And this is where I dropped the ball in this situation. I think that's very important to do.
I want to talk about the bad grade thing though. And
sure.
Everybody thinks that their kid is going to go, and if they can knuckle down, buckle down, they're going to excel, and that it's a great opportunity and all that. And,
right.
and they think about that in terms of everything. But the truth is the average person is average, right? Most people aren't going to be very good students. And
right.
Maybe they're very, very bright. You are. But the circumstances, whatever they may be, means that most people aren't terribly good students. And so what happens? That system isn't built for the average person. And that's the thing that I was keenly aware of when I went in the early 90s was that it really wasn't, it was built for the ones that were going to excel. But if you weren't one of those, you know, you were there covering the overheads and the, keeping the lights on for the people that were going to. There was a chick in the School of Microbiology that I was in. Her name was Kim, and Kim's parents both were physicians. And we were both in the pre-med program. And I think our grades were the same, pretty darn close. Mm-hmm. She was bright, not any brighter than me, I don't think. But our grades were very, very similar, but it was all I could do to afford to go there and do what I was doing. And then the summer before her junior year, she started taking the MCAT prep courses, medical candidacy aptitude test stuff. I couldn't do that. Mm. What do? If you don't make the best grade and you aren't in the best degree program, like what happens? I don't know. There's just so many questions, and it's just not the automatic that it was, you know, pre-1990 or in 1958.
Well, and as we see with, you know, Operation Varsity Blues here too, like what if you're not in a top tier school? Or like, I'm sure those schools that wouldn't typically be considered top tier schools that were on the list of the schools that were involved in or victims of this scandal or this scheme, because I'm guessing it doesn't go all the way to the top in most of these schools. I'm guessing most people in the schools had no idea this was going on, and it's just like the holes in the system that other people exploited. But there must have been a reason why parents or Rick Singer had selected these schools, right, even if they were not Ivy League schools. But that's also another really important question in addition to grades is like, where are you? You know, my advice at the end is like, you want to go to college? All right. Well, it better be a top tier school with a great endowment where things can change really quickly and resources can be added or subtracted as necessary, well ahead of the trends in that industry that you're trying to go into. Or even if it's not a top tier school, if it's like a medium tier school, they better be known for the program that you are going into at that school. And if you can't satisfy those requirements and be in the top of your class grades wise while you're there and be building, you know, related professional experience and building a helpful professional network lateral to the pursuit of that degree, do something else, right? Like, do not go to the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts and get a degree in criminal justice.
Right. A B student at a B-tier school is oblivion.
Absolutely. And those are – that is the new high school diploma, right? So that kind of takes us back to one of the things that I think is at the root of this problem. People are getting those crappy criminal justice degrees from crap college because the value of the degree is so thoughtlessly inflated. But now those degrees that were probably just always like hovering right above worthless are now worthless, are unquestionably worthless to employers. They have no practical value. But the thing that we're trying to sound the alarm on this show and various other places, there's people with bigger platforms saying the exact same thing, is that the religion needs to change, right? I think the utility of this show for the people in your audience and the people in my audience can be if you converse with people about this while it is a scandal. And I think this might just be the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
I think this might expand. I think if more famous people are named, this could be in the news for a while. Do not let it be shifted. If you see this on Facebook, if you see this on Twitter, if you're having these conversations in real life, you know, focus on the root problems in higher education and the public attitudes about this issue. The media is going to take it to identity politics. It's going to be privilege, affirmative action. That is just an endless fight for you to sink into, right? For-profit education, down with capitalism. Don't take that bait. And I would even say if people, and this is like probably a less of an incendiary one, but if people talk about doing away with standardized tests, I don't know. I have a soft spot for the I certainly didn't do well on them the first time I took them, but I did tutor the SAT and I ran a company, and the idea that I was presenting doing SAT tutoring, and the idea that I was presenting to people is like, there are critical thinking skills that school left underdeveloped. And I think a short-term rigorous preparation for this test can help a young person be more college ready. If they take that opportunity, they can expand their vocabulary by thousands of words in ways that make sense. They can become more persuasive writers, more efficient persuasive writers.
They can expand their critical thinking skills through the treadmill of like higher level multi-step math problems. Those are all good things.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of students who were, you know, by the public school's metrics, performing very well in AP classes, terribly frustrated to the point of yelling at me in a couple of cases, in a couple of these classes, when presented with real critical thinking challenges. And that was just, I mean, that was 2008, 2009, 2010. I was having those experiences. And that just further alerted me to the failure of public school. Public school is very successful at a lot of things, you know, indoctrination, obedience, conformity, does all that well, producing an apathetic public that's easy to write new things on, very accomplished. But getting people excited about education and making people rigorous thinkers, it fails. Right. And I saw that firsthand, you know, with AP top-tier school-bound kids. So I think that the SAT is valuable, but because when the SAT is mentioned, the sort of widespread perception is, oh, SAT, terrible, 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 right? There's like a negative association with it. It can become a lightning rod for the whole meritocracy discussion. As meritocracy moves away or realistic feedback mechanisms in higher education, the SAT could go on the chopping block and could open the door to, you know, the removal of a lot more meritocracy from higher education. A lot more realistic feedback done away with for the sake of not hurting people's feelings. Right. And I think when you're training people to survive and thrive in the real world, honest feedback, even if it's cold and prickly, is a good thing to have.
Yeah, I always wanted, when I was in high school, I always wanted to be able to just take the ACT or the SAT and just move on. You know, if you could take those tests and you're 12 and a school and a college would take you, you know, I just like, that should be good enough, you know, but at the time in Oklahoma, you couldn't do that. So I'm all for the meritocracy and actually that kind of standardized test seems to be the market has spoken and seems to agree that the SAT is a valid ruler to use to, you know, evaluate people's readiness for school or for college.
So yeah, there's that. And there's the opportunity. And I saw a lot of kids, and that was really great thing. And that was kind of why I shifted the focus or the presentation of our business when I was talking to parents. We want to present to kids an opportunity here. There's an opportunity in this test, and we think we have a kind of training that takes advantage of it. There's so many people. I mean, like, for-profit education is such a big business that we had a lot of competition, especially where I live, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, very wealthy area. A lot of people have money, and a lot of people had this religion of higher education then, you know, 10 years ago, maybe as much as they do today, maybe more. Maybe more than they do today. College has become so embattled in the last 5 years. Maybe there were less questions 10 years ago before the social justice war and Tucker Carlson shredding academics on his show every night. There was probably more faith then. So there was a lot of money to be thrown at this, and there was a lot of competition in what I did. And that was the most effective way to set my company apart was to talk about that opportunity. And I still believe that to this day.
I think that the post-2008 economic realities have disabused people of their high school or their college diploma worship. You know, I think that's done a lot to get rid of that. And then, like you said, the social justice stuff and all that. College is on the decline in terms of the esteem it's held in. But to go back to the history of American education from an hour ago, something that I've seen since I've noticed this since I had kids. It was probably going on before then, but there is sort of a private education, public education hybrid that goes on that people never want to talk about. So it's very, very common for people to send their kid to the local public school and then they ring the bell and then school's over and they take them straight to Kumon or Sylvan or the tutor and then they get more. And then they take them to the prep. Then they take them to the prep guy, the Princeton Review or Kaplan or Vinod or whatever. I think that's new. I think that's new-ish. I think that's a newer thing that has occurred, I think probably since the 70s, where there's a blurring there and people aren't part of just one or the other, you know, the private or the public in education. So the market seems to recognize that the kids aren't getting what they need there in K-12, for example, and taking them to Sylvan or Kumon or whatever to get more and to get more accountability and hopefully better results.
Yeah, and it's a shame because I think there's a lot of people who work on that private service provider and who, I mean, sure, there's plenty of people who just do it as a job to make extra money. A lot of those people are teachers, but in my experience, I met a lot of really competent people, a lot of young people, like a lot of college students mm-hmm. do that kind of work. Admittedly, it's hard to find good ones. I definitely interviewed lots of them in these two different companies that I worked in. But young people are energetic. They're enthusiastic about the subjects they're tutoring in. And it's kind of like, well, did you really need that 7 hours of what you did before you went to the private
right.
tutoring service? Like, I worked with, you know, high schoolers, middle schoolers when I still did academic tutoring. Kids would have problems with teachers. They'd have some kind of arrangement with the school where they'd be privately tutored in a subject. We could do, you know, a year. You know, when you subtract those other 25 kids and mm-hmm. and the school schedule, you can do a year of instruction in 8 weeks,
yeah.
less even, yeah. you know, depending on the subject, depending on the kid's interest, but depending on the kid's aptitude. Maybe a month.
Yeah. For a very, very long time, we took our oldest daughter to a college student who was a tutor, who was her mm-hmm. her tutor, and they did that on Wednesdays for about an hour and a half. And in that hour and a half, they could do what a normal kid would be doing in maybe a week or more in their regular
right.
class. And, you know, pretty low cost and completely individual one-on-one help with that. And they got along great and got good results. So what in the hell could they have done with that $6 million instead of trying to get them on the crew team?
Exactly.
So crazy.
You know, if I were to add, I always talked about these three hidden lessons of school. If I were to add a fourth that is certainly never stated out loud, but implicit and constant through the entire experience, and I would say this even extends into higher education, is that young people learn their time is not valuable, right? Because nobody ever encourages them to value it. Nobody ever acts like it's valuable. I mean, so much of school is just waste.
Yeah.
Right. It is just routine. It is just programming. It is just bloat and fat and unnecessary. And if you endure that for 15,000 hours plus 4 additional years of schooling, where, like, I mean, my goodness, if I went to college to get the information that was in my bachelor's degree, right? Like the hard skills that were in my bachelor's degree, I could have done 1995 to the year 2000 when I graduated, I could have done that in a summer.
Right.
I could have done it in a summer. And so it was just an extension of a lesson that I was happy to accept based on my previous training, that this time when I am most energetic, when I am in this prime of emerging into adulthood, that it's perfectly fine to spend a Friday night throwing beer bottles at a payphone or whatever, you know, just like so many wasted nights, so many days sleeping till noon. It was so much time wasted or spent destructively. And I could have been in and out of there, you know, June to August if the program had been structured more efficiently.
All that beer bottle throwing at payphones, that's what people normally call the college experience.
The college experience, right? That's a lot of what you're paying for.
Yeah.
No info for the DEA. Federal agents mad cause I'm flagrant. Tap myself and the phone in the basement. My team supreme, stay clean. Triple beam, miracle dream. I'll be that. Catch a seat at all events bent. Gats and holsters, girls on shoulders. Playboy, I told ya. Me and Mike to me, bruise too much. I lose too much. Step on stage, the girls boo too much. I guess it's cause you run with lame dudes too much. Me lose my touch, never that. If I did, ain't no problem to get the gap. Where the true players at? Throw your rollies in the sky, waving side to side, and keep your hands high while I give your girl an eye. Player please, lyrically, nigga C, B-I-G-B flossing, jig on the cover of Fortune, 500. It's my phone number, your man, I got the know, I got the dough, got the flow down, Pizzak, platinum plus, like Zizak, dangerous, on Trizak, leave your ass Pizzak.